To stand before a microphone to bring a smile to the face of every member of the audience. Ah, the anticipation. Will it be the latest news from the land of Leviathan? An ironic remark about a beloved icon? A Wildean reflection on the rock-solid dependability of conservatives when they come to power. In 1982, for example, during the Falkland Islands crisis, precipitated by Argentina's attempt to take back some real estate over which Great Britain had enjoyed sovereignty for many years, Stan was moved to comment. The crisis, he said, was a difficult one for conservatives. On the one hand, we like imperialism. On the other hand, we like military dictatorships. I feel like Bob Hope up here. I can't mess with this material. In 1996, in the middle of the Clinton-Dole presidential campaign, Stan was asked to evaluate the vice presidential candidates, Al Gore and Jack Kemp. And his response was a bit of fantasy about Kemp. Famous, of course, for speaking faster and longer than any other politician in America. Well, during World War II, the story goes, Jack Kemp was a pilot who was shot down over Nazi Germany. And he wound up in a POW camp, and one fateful day was taken to the interrogation room. There he was confronted by a Gestapo colonel with a monocle, a scar running down his cheek, and a riding crop that he constantly struck against his leg. "So," said the Gestapo colonel, "you are Jack Kemp." And leaning forward till his face almost touched Jack's, the Gestapo man said, "We have ways to make you stop talking." Well, in the mid-70s, Stan laid down his most famous axiom, sometimes referred to as Evans' Law of Political Perfidy, quote, "When our people get to the point where they can do us some good, they stop being our people." That's about 30, 40 years old now. Another Evans axiom cited almost as often as the preceding law is, quote, "The trouble with conservatives is that too many of them come to Washington thinking they're going to drain the swamp, only to discover that Washington is a hot tub." Well, I could also mention that another one, early to bed and early to rise makes a man miserable, but I won't. Or any country that can manage to put a man on the moon can manage to eliminate the income tax. What I do want to say is what an enormous difference Stan Evans has made in the lives of so many of us. For example, he taught us the value of a revered Indiana custom, the oath of the snake. If somebody has double-crossed you or done you wrong, you lie patiently in the deep grass, and when your enemy least expects it, you strike him hard where it hurts. Stan also taught us how to pronounce marijuana. He taught us the importance of the right diet. Asked what he has for breakfast, Stan is forthright, "My usual breakfast is black coffee and cigarettes." Asked for an explanation, Stan replies, "Some people say, I don't have time for breakfast. I say, make time. Because breakfast is the most important meal of the day." Now, some people have tried to make fun of Stan's distrust of modern inventions, the calling him a latter-day Ned Ludd. But Stan is no Luddite. He's actually a neo-Luddite. As evidenced by the fact that he writes not with a quill pen, but on an Olympia manual typewriter. But it is a manual Olympia typewriter. On a personal note, I can freely admit that Stan got me into politics back in the late 1950s. I just returned from living abroad, knew few people in Washington, D.C., and Stan persuaded me to join the D.C. Young Republicans because, he said, the club has lots of pretty girls, and because he needed my vote. It was an upcoming election for the vice presidency of the DCYRs. Well, Stan, you know you lost to Zoltan Michael Zoss, who had a thicker accent than Henry Kissinger. But Stan was right about the girls. I met one of the prettiest and smartest YRs a couple of years later, my wife, Ann. Well, in between proselytizing for Elvis and editing the Indianapolis News, Stan wrote two of the most enduring books of the last 40 years, Revolt on the Campus, and The Theme is Freedom. In Revolt, published in 1961, he discerned a conservative revolt on the campus against liberal conformity and collectivism and made a fearless prediction. While admitting that the majority of students were liberals, he said that some 5% were articulate, forceful, and resourceful conservatives. In 20 years, he predicted, they would be the nation's journalists, teachers, clergy, and leading businessmen. In fact, he said, the conservative movement in 15 or 25 years, quote, is going to be taking possession of the seats of power in the United States. Well, that seemed pretty far-fetched at a time when John F. Kennedy had just been elected president, Walter Cronkite was the most trusted man in America. The captive nations of Eastern Europe seemed more captive than ever. Bob Taft and Joe McCarthy were dead, and only a lone Arizona senator was consciously articulating the conservative position. And yet, 20 years later, almost to the day, Ronald Reagan, a self-described and proud conservative, was elected the 40th president of the United States. In The Theme is Freedom, published in 1994, Stan showed that Western liberty and American free institutions are products of our religious faith and cannot survive without it. In contrast to the radicals of the French Revolution, Stan wrote, the founders who engineered American independence were true conservatives, seeking to preserve the best elements of their Western heritage, especially a faith in God, while achieving political sovereignty. A few years later, when asked to list the 5 most significant moments of the second millennium, let's try that out for an exercise, Stan offered these: the Magna Carta, 1215, the deposition of Richard II in 1399, the British Parliament of 1628, the Stamp Act crisis of 1765-66, and the American Revolution and Constitution from 1776 through 1787. I must admit, those are wonderful selections, Stan, but you left out rock and roll. I'm pretty shocked that you did that. Stan was also an associate editor of National Review for more than a decade, has been a contributing editor to Human Events for nearly 40 years, wrote a syndicated newspaper column for 13 years, was a commentator for National Public Radio, The Voice of America, CBS Radio and Television for more than 20 years. In 1977, he founded the National Journalism Center, through which he has touched and shaped the professional lives of some 1,400 graduates, among them the redoubtable Ann Coulter and the ubiquitous John Fund. Stan has just finished his latest book, Revisionist History of Joseph R. McCarthy, the sainted senator from Wisconsin. Just how thorough Stan has been in his research can be seen in his purchase of a house. He bought a house down in Hamilton, Virginia, in which he stored hundreds of thousands of pages of hearings, memoranda, correspondence, and files he has collected about the senator. He calls it his House of Communism. And will, on the slightest pretext, give tours to visitors. Well, born in Kingsville, Texas, educated at Yale and New York University, Stan has received honorary degrees from Grove City College and other institutions of higher learning. And in recognition of his decades of service as an adjunct professor, the Hall School of Journalism at Troy State University has named its annual symposium the M. Stanton Evans Symposium on Money, Politics, and the Media. Stan is indifferent to the first, an expert on the second, and passionate about the third. Once queried by Time as to his political review, Stan replied, "I think my philosophy is pretty close to the farmer in Seymour, Indiana. He believes in God. He believes in the U.S. He believes in himself. This intuitive position is much closer to wisdom than the tortured theorems of some of our Harvard dons." That's spoken like a true Yale man, Stan. George Bernard Shaw once remarked that Wagner's music is not as bad as it sounds. Well, happily for us, Stan Evans is as good as he sounds. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you our good friend, valued colleague, and former president, the one, the only, the inestimable M. Stanton Evans.